Orlu Yud Ches Ador, we're in Shar HaBechina, and Perek Dalet, we're at the very, very end of Perek Dalet. We're about to embark on Perek Hey, and we just to go over the seven areas that the Chavis Alvavas pinpoints are worthy of Bechina, worthy of delving into and seeing Chachmas Hashem and Chesed Hashem, which are the twin attributes of Hashem. Well, that Hashem exists, He really it does that also for you. And by seeing the Chachmas Hashem, by seeing plan and design and purpose and how everything works, and then you see Chesed Hashem. So number one was physics and chemistry, which we'll say over a little today. Hopefully we'll get to what you printed out about. I think the best way to do that, if you have a computer, I think the anthropic principle is the best way to see that, where you see that the laws of physics and chemistry, first of all, the very fact that there are laws of physics and chemistry, these words roll off our tongues so easily, and like, where'd they come from? Forget about that. The anthropic principle shows that the laws are perfectly fine-tuned for life, for life on Earth, for humans, for life in the universe, and it's a very narrow bandwidth, we'll call it, that allows life. So we'll be reading about that shortly. But that Chavis didn't know anything about that. I mean, his knowledge of physics and chemistry was very rudimentary, and he's still talking about the four elements. But even then, it's tremendous and unbelievable chokhma. And you know that the world works and the world sits there in space. I mean, they knew that, and they knew about the rotation of the planets already by him. I mean, it's still tremendous chachma, and it's fine tuned for life, and it's cool. And the scientists come up with all kinds of fancy theories to come up with theories about why this doesn't really prove that there's a creator. So that's number one, and the Chavis HaLavas is physics and chemistry. Number two is not clear. I still don't have it clear. Because number three is the biology of man. Number three is the way his avorim, how everything works, and how they're everything, blood vessels, and fingers, and the digestive system, and the brains, and speech. And that's number three. And a person's and memory, and forgetting, and all kinds of things. But number two is, I don't know what to call it, it's like the study of mankind. He puts mankind on a pedestal, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, really. We know that person was created last, Chazal tell us. The whole concept of mankind is worthy of study in itself. The idea, I guess, I'm not sure he doesn't elaborate on that. He elaborates very little on it, and the Mepharshim don't say much. Just the way a person was put in, the idea of mankind, that you put into a world and we build buildings and bridges and we tame the wild, we tame the wilderness, we make things grow, people invent things. So of course it's all Hashpa'as Hashem, but he created this, that the Chasreyu Ma'at Me'elokim. I mean, mankind, the idea of mankind is it's so vastly superior to animals. There's this creature who gets married and has children and has generations, and like there's no yachas in animals, there is a little idea of a herd. Maybe in some animals there's an idea of a family unit, but certainly nothing like people have. Children and grandchildren, and they interrelate, and they teach, and they're mechanech, and every generation builds upon the last generation, and a person has goals and ideals. I think this is what he means. He really doesn't elaborate. The idea that there's this creature that's like Hashem. And it says the Malachi Asharis wanted to sing Shira to Adam Arishon. Right? That's an amazing sentence to say. I don't know what it means, but a man has Bechira, that's Telem Elohim. So number two is the idea of mankind, the concept that there's a creature who can create, who can do, who can have Bechira, who could tame the world, and Hashem gave him the world to tame. Pru Revu Umeluas Haaretz V'Chivshuha. Right? Take charge of the world, charge of the animal kingdom, plant, grow, invent, build. That is worthy of study and amazement that there is such a thing. You know, in the cosmos, there's nothing going on. On this one little planet, there's mankind. Now, some of mankind is not very pretty. It's not very pretty with wars and killings and mass murders and tyrants. But that's all part of mankind. It's all part of the amazing thing. And not history. See, history is already number six. I would put history in number six. But just the idea that, you know what it's like? It just hit me. I guess I'm struggling to understand it. It's sort of like that. There's a famous medrash that you may have heard where the Roman Caesar says to Rabbi Shua, I think it is, you know, or Rabbi Kiva, that Mila is not very logical. Hashem created a person a certain way. What are you improving on Hashem's handiwork? And the answer was, yeah, that's how Hashem made the world, that we should improve on His handiwork. Hashem made wheat. Can't eat a wheat kernel. I mean, you got to do something to it. You could bake it in the oven, maybe, and eat it, and it's sweet. But you could pound it and grind it up, and then you could make bread with it, which is the staff of life, sustenance, is bread. And bread doesn't go from the ground, and cookies don't go from the ground, and a person does all sorts of things, and Hashem gave over the world. Kivshuha is a very powerful word in the Pasuk. Reduas ha'aretz v'kivshuha. Tame the world and bring it to heel and use it in the service of mankind. And until relatively recently in history, man used animals. And now man is using science and chemistry and physics to do great things in the world. And this is all the chiddush of mankind. That's number two. It's a subject worthy of note and study. Three is the technicality of a man and the animal too. The biology, the bones, the blood vessels, how the brain works, how the digest, how everything works, which is amazing and worthy. Although this in Perek Hay delves mostly into number three, he'll start off Perek Hay saying that's the closest to home, and that's what we're going to focus on. Then he touches upon at the end of the Perek, he touches upon the animal kingdom, which is number four. Number five is plant life, which he touches upon. Not really, he doesn't even touch upon that. Number six, which we ended up spending the whole last week on, is history, I think. He doesn't put it like that. See, we're used to thinking, I think, and this is maybe something we can walk away from the Chayvus Halavos's list with, that we think, even believers, we believe in Hashem, so we believe Hashem controls and creates. I don't know, maybe we have to speak that out. Hashem created all these laws. It's really amazing when you think about it. Like, someone that doesn't believe, so like, what do you mean there's a law? Why should there be a law? Like, what do you mean? Newton's law of whatever. So, nobody made that law? It just is? Okay, that's what he wants you to think about. But I'm saying now about, I think even Ma'aminim, who already realized that Hashem made these laws and Hashem made everything. Hashem, even the most basic laws, like I said, the Chanukah, like the law of identity, and that two things can't be in different places at the same time. And Hashem created that. Hashem is not subject to those laws, of course. And Anais can negate those laws, even though our minds can't even fathom. Like I said about the Aron Kodesh and the Kodesh Kedoshim, which was an everyday fact of life in the first Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan, you measured from here to here, and you measured from here to here, and you got 20. Then you measured the Aron, and then you measured from wall to wall, and you still got 20. So 10 plus 10 plus something equals 20. That doesn't fit into our mathematical system. But that's a component, though. The point is, but we don't think of inventions and the progress of man as being Ma'aseh Hashem, and it is. And that's also number six. Hashem picks the point in history where there's going to be a printing press, and he picks the point in history where they're going to have street lights, and someone had and he wants you to examine these things and think about them, and someone had to think about sidewalks. Sidewalks is a very good thing. I lived in Muncie, in many areas there were no sidewalks.
Still aren't.
So I say, hey, someone had to think of making a sidewalk. Someone had to think of making a fire department, putting out fires. Someone had to think of all these things. And we have to thank Hashem for them. We have to thank Hashem, what does it say in the Mishnah novels? You have to thank Hashem that there's civilization, that there's a police force, that there's armies, like the world developed certain money. Money is, I don't know now, with computers, people are going back to barter. But imagine if there was no, someone had to think of money. At some point in history, someone had to think of money.
Wasn't Adam taught by Hashem though?
About money?
Yeah.
Maybe, but it's from Hashem, so it's a chiddush. Yeah. Without money, so I may have wheat, and you need wheat, but I'm not going to give it to you, so you have to come up with something that I need. And you don't have any milk. I want milk. You want wheat. So we have to find a third person. Like, very complicated. It's a big chiddush. So someone had to come up with the idea of money, which is a tremendous chiddush, because money is worthless. It's worthless. You can't eat it. It doesn't do anything for you. So someone had to decide. It's from Hashem. That's the point. Someone had to decide at some point in history, and that there's a thing called money that everybody accepts, and it's legal tender. And now we've degenerated into paper money, not backed by the gold anymore, mm-hmm. and which leads to inflation. But that's already, we're not going there. We're not going to go there. I remember I grew up, you had to have a bar in Fort Knox for every dollar they printed. There had to be a gold bar, not for every dollar, but for whatever, there was gold. Then someone said, why? That gold's not doing any good for us. Let's just print money without gold. Nixon took us off the gold standard. There could be inflation if there's not enough goods. So if you have more supply than demand, more demand than supply, there's going to be inflation. Prices are going to rise. But that's because of supply and demand. Anyway, things appeared. The Industrial Revolution happened at a certain point in history. Computers happened at a certain point in history. Things happen, and it's all from Hashem. It's not like people created the telephone, everything. So that's number six, is to study that, and to study the skills and the crafts that developed in the world, how to make clothing. I mean, that's really embraceous. You have a little of that, the idea of making music, and the idea of who are you, Avi, Kol Tofes Kinor V'Ugov, these things came into the world at a certain point of time, like lights, I mean, anything. So we don't usually think of Hashem then, even Ma'aminim, who do think of Hashem when it comes to the physical laws, or the Teva laws, or even animals and plants, but by human invention. But it's not true. Hashem plans history. And, you know, just in our time, or almost our time, I mean, you read Megillas Esther. You know, I'm like a Litvak. So I feel bad that I'm so intent on hearing every word that I miss out on the story. Because that's what happens when you sit there. That's why I need a good Balkore, mm-hmm. that I don't have to strain to hear every word. I could just sit back and let the words, like, wash over me. And I could But then you're afraid your mind will wander if you think about the story. Then you go, uh-oh, I missed the word, maybe. Which I do. Call the Rav. But the story is... it's like everybody knows Purim. Like, but, you know, I would love... Maybe I should have done it before Purim. Sit down and you examine the story, like how many points in the story could things have so easily turned out differently? Mm-hmm. I mean, that Ahasuerus married Vashti, that Vashti made her own party. I mean, all these things, and that he had first a party of 180 days, so he's feeling like full of himself. This is all Hashem's like plotting, writing the play, and everything is meaningful. Like he's feeling full of himself, and then with Shushan, then the seventh day he was a little drunk, Tov Lev HaMelech Bayayin, and he asks Vashti to do something that's like absurd, ridiculous. No, you don't do that. And Vashti, meanwhile, is making a different party, so she's very regal and she's aristocratic, and she. And then Mamuchan come. I mean, I have a sefer. I found a sefer. Every pasuk, really, every single pasuk. It goes to the whole Megillah. It's a wonderful sefer. Every single pasuk reflects Hashgacha Pratis, and the sefer goes and shows you how every single pasuk is reflects Hashgacha and reflects how Hashem is behind the scenes moving everything. And if you really, I mean, you have to walk away from Purim at least with that. I mean, you know. Purim's a lot of fun, and enough for women, okay? But women are tense. But really, I mean, Purim should do a lot for Muna, Bitachon, you know, Esther going in, you know. Esther, said, look, the Gzeira is going to happen in Adar. Now it's Nisan. We have 11 months. And the Melech didn't call me ready for 30 days, which has many layers of meaning, but one meaning certainly is he's going to call me any day. I mean, how long are you going to go without calling for me? So it's 30 days already, and we have 11 months. What do I have to go now and risk my life for? Why don't I just wait till he calls me? No, Mordechai says you have to be Moser Nefesh. You have to show the Abitochen Hashem, that you're relying on Hashem, and... You know, and then you have to go in, and then she goes in, and she doesn't ask him right away. See, then Mordechai was okay with that. She said, "Come to the party," and she's like waiting for the right moment. I imagine, I don't know, this is speculation on my part, that Mordechai was okay with when she said, "I'll wait for the Melech to call me," and he's going to call me any day, and we have 11 months, so like nothing's happening for the next 11 months. So that Mordechai get no, and because he detected a little self-interest there. That's what it says in the Megillah. I mean, that's what it says with Farish in the Pasuk. Al tadami b'nafsheich limolid beisavet. That's what he said to her, which means that he detected an element. That's what he saw. I mean, he was her mentor. But then, once she passed the test. And then she went in, Mesiras Nefesh, you know. Then he was okay with her hishtadlus of waiting for the right moment. She could have blurted out then, you know, Mabakosh Oseich Seyos, she could have blurted out then, you know. Kinam Karnu Aniva Ami. The Mordechai thing was really not relevant to this. I mean, that's a question. Why did that happen? Like, that part of the story didn't have to happen. She said... But that was Harvona already that said, Gamineo Eitz, Asher also Haman, to hang Mordechai, Asher Diber Tov al HaMelech, which led to the king's anger reaching a certain peak. So in a fit of anger, it's like if Obama would say, you know, hang the vice president up, or hang Hillary Clinton up, like in 1 second. In one moment, he's the most powerful person in the kingdom. Second most powerful, right? And he's really he's full of himself because he says, "V'gam l'mocher ani korulah im amelech," right? He says, Vayisaprahum, he chazes over his wealth and his children, Ve'esa sher gidlo ha-melech, and he's like, he's sitting down with his family and he's telling over how great he is, and he's going up in ascending order. And then the ultimate, he says, and I'm invited to a private party with the king. So he's really at the peak, and then they say, okay, so make an eitz for Mordechai, like, Adarabba, this is the good moment, and go to the melech. We know the story. But, and then 1 second later, because the king got so angry. That's because Charvona said that. But that was not part of the story, really. I mean, Esther didn't say anything about Mordechai. She just said, "Kinam karnu aniva ami lashem vargal abed vila lavodim lefachos dem karnu echarashdi kenas hashav benezek hamelech." And then the melech says, "Miuze veizu hashem below libo lasos kain." And she says, "Ish tarva oyev hamana razeh." Like the Mordechai angle was not relevant at that point. So she could have said that as soon as the melech stuck out his sharvit, right? And Mordechai insisted she go in now. And she not even wait a day. So she waits 3 days because she says everybody should daven for her. So that also Mordechai was okay with. Because if you're waiting 3 days so that everybody should daven and fast and do tshuva, so that's okay. Then he didn't think anymore, it was self-interest. When she wanted to wait 3 days or whatever till he calls me in, he didn't even let her wait 1 day. He said, no, now, you got to go in immediately, because he detected self-interest. But then she says, okay, I'm going in. Now I want you to fast for 3 days. So then he was okay waiting 3 days. Then she goes in and she waits for the right moment. I guess because Mordechai then saw that she was moser nefesh and she was totally relying on Hashem, and she was listening to Mordechai and having bitachon. That's Perek Chav Beis in Tehillim, right? That's Ayelas HaShachar, that's Esther, right? So that's B'cho B'otcho Avuseinu, B'otcho B'atfalteimo. But then she waits for the right moment. To a party, she says, come again to a party tomorrow. Like, and how does she know it's the right moment tomorrow? I don't know, I guess because she saw what happened to Mordechai overnight. So she saw an ace. So she got like a booster shot. She felt that was the right moment. If she sees that Mordechai, Haman is degraded by leading Mordechai around town, it's just like the confluence of events is amazing. So, what am I saying this for? Because I think he talks about studying history and studying inventions. I think the creation of the state of Israel, I don't care, Satma, yes, Satma, not Satma, it's an amazing, it's an unbelievable story. It's an unbelievable story how it happened. If you study history, with the Ottoman Empire and England and the World War One and the League of Nations and this guy, what's his name, Herzl, and the Dreyfus affair. Like, if you know the history of how it happened, it's like it's amazing. It's really a subject worthy of study, and that's the flow of history. Okay. That's what he wants us to study. And anything's like that. Even how America was discovered, like Spain. Spain is a nothing now, right? Spain's a nothing. But if anybody is, I think, you know, what did Spain accomplish in its life? Bullfights and sangria. and Columbus discovered America. Like that. The whole Spain, and they were the world power. They were, and what did they do? They did nothing but discover America. What else did they do?
Flamingo dancing. Sangria.
You said sangria.
Right. That's
a nice art from Spain.
Didn't he actually even go from Portugal? He didn't even go from Spain, I think.
What do you mean? The Queen, I learned in school, Queen Isabella sent them out with the Nina, let me see, the Nina, the something, and the Santa Maria.
uh-huh.
It's amazing, like the whole Spain was for America, and like that also took time, and it had, And it was there. I mean, okay, Roosevelt was a Russia, but Lamaisa, the Jewish people rebuilt themselves after the Shoah in America and in Eretz Yisrael. It's amazing. If we wouldn't be living in it, we'd be reading about it. You could write 10 Megillas Esters about the stories and what happened, and that the League of Nations voted there should be the mandate. Mandate means the mandate to give Israel to the Jews. Not a mandate. British had a mandate to be an apotropos over Palestine until the Jewish people are ready to take it over. The word mandate means they were given a job, a task. Then they said they're going to keep it. So then when they started,
they sabotaged
it. Yeah, so that's why the Irgun and the Lehi and all these groups started fighting them. I'm saying now, Maishi, there wasn't a Merida B'Umos at all. The Umos were morayed in what they promised to do. So you fight that they should keep their promise. That's not a Merida B'Umos. So, and then the Ramban at the end of Shir HaShirim very famously says that the Umos will get together and give back Eretz Yisrael to the Jews. So then the Shir HaShirim. So they gave it to us. And now you look how the whole world. It's also a subject for study. How. I think Haman was probably the first person that wanted to destroy all the Jews. All the Jews. Mitzrayim didn't want to destroy all the Jews. Destroy, like get rid of every place. Destroy every single Jew. I don't know how he would do it in one day. And let's say a Jew runs away and escapes. So what? Then nothing's going to happen to him the next day. I don't know what he was thinking. How do you do it in one day?
They didn't have weapons of mass destruction.
What?
They didn't have weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, so I don't know. How do you do it in one day? What, I don't know. Okay, but that's what it says, in one day. There's a Hasidic joke that he knew that there's a good chance. This is the joke. He knew there was a good chance that there would be a nes, there would be a yontif. So he didn't fagin, we should have a yontif more than one day. We ended up with 2 days anyway. We ended up with 2 days anyway. It's also an amazing thing. I mean, Purim, maybe I should speak more, I don't know. Purim, amazing, like the first day it was defensive. Because they were in Sakana, so they got permission to fight back. Right? But then the second day, and then, see, Venahapachu was a big chiddush. Because who said that they went around, they killed Goyim. They made a pogrom against the Goyim. I mean, it doesn't sound like they needed that to defend themselves. It's Venahapachu, maybe, yeah, Venahapachu asher, Yishutu Ayudim Hema B'Sainayim. Okay, so maybe it was still defensive. You don't know. Maybe it was in a defensive war. You also have to kill the other people, because how else do you defend yourself? But the second day was definitely not defensive anymore. Esther said, just the Jews in Shushan should keep killing Goyim. Let them keep killing Goyim. So that's already. So there's taka a big chiddush there that we should take nekama in our enemies. Not just tzahal, not just be what is it called? Lahagona? What does tzahal stand for? So Hagana, right? They say in their name that they're only a defensive. I mean, I don't think that's a good thing. I think that's part of the problem, that they'll only react. They won't go attack. Like they say, we're only, like they have to declare, we're only going to defend ourselves. You have to take the initiative. So sometimes in the Six Day War they did. But it was also defensive, but they just went ahead. And then in the Yom Kippur War they didn't. They also knew it was coming. But by then they were under America's thumb already. And then all the wars were even worse, the Lebanon War. And then when Iraq, by the first Bush, America said, don't even defend yourself. And now, with Iran, it's also very... It's all... Because if you call yourself Tzva Haganah, so then you can make a cheshbon, which is better Haganah. Okay, they don't believe in Hashem. What do you expect from them? You can expect better. Okay, anyway, so... history, yeah, so let's talk about the history of the creation of Klal Yisrael, and it is an amazing. You could write like 10 Megillas Esters. Like, you could read Rabbi Wein portrays it very nicely in his books and on his tapes, like the miracle, Derech HaTeva, Mamish like Purim, the miracle, and then the Shoah intrudes, and out of the Shoah becomes Medinas Yisrael. Not just the opening of Eretz Yisrael to Yid living there, but being the Bilem of Eretz Yisrael. And everybody and like a few years later, everybody hates us with such an irrationality, like saying we kill children and we put the blood in the matzahs. You come up with these, like the Haman also. Haman, I don't know, maybe he said the truth. He said they always want a day off. They want off on Chalamayim, and they want off. But even the 5-day week is a tremendous chesed. The whole social upheavals, I think, of the beginning of the 20th century, maybe in the 1900s, the labor strikes on the Lower East Side, all this labor, it turned out very good for the Yidden. Because from that came liberalism. I mean, in a certain, I'm no liberal, I'm a conservative. But liberalism, the whole movement, Chavis Lovis wants you to study that. I'm not, Chavis Lovis says the number 6 is to study this and to see the Yad Hashem in history and to see how the world developed and how we became free and the separation of church and state. You know, it happened at a certain point in time. It's a very mixed blessing, separation of church and state. I told you this last week, I think. It's a very mixed blessing. But they didn't have no power. Kehilos have no power. The government does not give anymore kemat. It used to be, maybe in certain areas of the world they do, but the Western world does not give any power to religious. So we, you know, people say, why doesn't the Beis Din do this? Why, they don't have any power. They don't have any power. We can't govern ourselves at all. But I assume Hashem, but it's a good thing, I don't know, because you have so many now you have conservative Judaism, there's no such thing, but they call themselves conservative Judaism and Reform Judaism. So like, if you would have, imagine what Rav Hirsch had to contend with in Germany, like, so they give power to the kehilos, but then there's a secular Jewish kehila. Mm-hmm. So you have to fight with them. Like, who's the real Jewish? Will the real Jewish kehila please stand up? So the whole thing became bottle. So maybe, not maybe. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing that you have no power now. But it's not good because you have to contend with not having any power. So if we have power, we can make taxes, tuition. I mean, all these things are because of separation of church and state. So we have no power to tax. So you have to charge tuition to have schools.
No vouchers.
Yeah. I'm talking about the Goyim got the whole public school system from us, that you tax everybody, and schooling is free. And you have to pay taxes whether or not you have a kid in school. You pay taxes, and the public schools are funded by the taxes. Well, that's for the common good. That was the way it was in all the kehilos. They taxed shechted meat. That's what they taxed. And my point is that, again, he writes as a guy, Jacob, I think it's his name, Astor, A-S-T-O-R, a young guy. At my age, everybody's a young guy already. I think more people are young guys than are not young guys at my age already. The guy Astor wrote some books about the Yad Hashem in history. truth is, you see it yourself. If you, I tell you, my son now wants to study history. Don't tell his Rosh Hashiva, get him to trouble. But he wants to learn history. He wants to read about history, not Jewish history. He doesn't read about Gedolim. You know. So we found them a book. My wife had a book from her mother, Lashalom. Her mother was a public school teacher, so she had a book from the school, from the library. So he likes it. I thought it was very boring. I thought he would be bored with it. One of these textbooks. He loves it. He's reading it. But the truth is, you could see it yourself, but you have to have an eye. This guy wrote a book showing the Yad Hashem in history. He wrote already two or three books.
In public school,
they have it? No. A guy, you forget, in a Jewish bookstore. I'm trying to remember. I think his name is Astor. A-S-T-O-R. That's his last name. He lived in Muncie. He's from Muncie. He's got it from Muncie. He wrote some articles in the Jewish Observer, Olah Shalom. And now he made a book. And he edits Zman, I think. You know this thing, Zman? I think he's the chief editor, because I see the name Astor, so I figure that must be him. It must be the same guy. Anyway, you don't have such books. But really, Chavitavavus says it's an area of study. I finally got to the point. It's an area of study. And if you listen to Rabbi Wein, has books that you have to be on the alert. Maybe Rabbi Wein doesn't like to appear to be too frum. Like, he doesn't talk about Hashem. You know, he wants to... On the tapes, maybe he does more than in the books. But it's really, if you're alert to it, and you think about the history and how the Yidden went from country to country, it's amazing. It's amazing. Okay, that's number six. And number seven, we're going to learn inside. I can't get past this list. I talk to I always get stuck. I'm fascinated by it. I think it's a subject because people don't think about it because they don't learn it in school. I mean, boys.
And when we do, it's boring.
Yeah.
I remember.
No, if you have the right teacher, right. It's mechazik emuna. Rabbi Wein taught history in his, when he had Yeshiva Munsi, Shari Torah. He taught always history. And he opened it. He shows you like how it follows, but you have to draw your own conclusions. And again, it's not just the history of the nations, it's the history of inventions and why certain things appeared at a certain time in history, and slavery, I told you, why slavery. Okay, now we're up to number seven in the end of Perek Dalet. Hashavias. The word is Hashavias. It's the end of Perek Dalet. I don't know, they have lines, like 25 lines before the end of Perek Dalet. Simen HaChokhma HaNira B'Kviyus HaTorah V'HaChukim. It is, the Torah is amazing. If you think of the society, the laws of the Torah, how it makes you a more spiritual person, how it makes you a better person, how it's the betterment of society. He's going to elaborate and show why Torah is so amazing. And, you know, you say, like, no human being could have created this document. It's just, you know, the blend of capitalism and socialism. It's basically capitalistic, but there's Isurim of Ribis. Like, you know, it took me a couple of years to realize how Ribis kills people. You know, you have a mortgage and you borrow money, and it's the shul. Let's say the shul can't catch its breath financially. It's all because of Ribis, because they borrowed money and the Ribis is killing them. And you borrow money, you know. I once had to borrow a relatively small sum of money, but for me it was large. But I managed to get interest-free loans. It's such a bracha, gemach, really. Anyway, I'm just giving one example. The Torah really creates the perfect society. Moshe Feiglin has a whole issue. He wrote a whole series of papers about how a banking system would look, lending money interest-free. how the economy would run, what would be banks' roles in such an economy. And he has a whole elaboration on that. So that's stop. So you look at the Torah and we'll stop here. But are we learning next week? Any reason why not? Pesach? No, not yet. Pesach didn't hit home yet. Remember, everything you clean now. Okay, we'll stop here. Everything you clean is a mitzvah. Remember, within 30 days. If you cleaned before, so you avoided an aveira. You're getting rid of chametz, but you didn't get a positive mitzvah. Now everything you clean, every shelf you do, have in mind, have be mechaveh that you're doing the mitzvah within 30 days. Now.